Hi, and welcome to MR Explorer, where friends Z Johnson and Christina Perkins get together on a regular basis to learn and explore different topics regarding the market research industry. Welcome to today's episode. We hope you enjoy.
Hi, Marianne. It's so good to have you here with us. Thank you for being here. Thank you for lending us your voice and giving us your time. What I would love first from you is to just introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background, your involvement in the market research industry, and what are you up to now? What are you doing now?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm just delighted to be here. So I have been in the market research industry for 20 years now. I started in data collection and conducting phone interviews. And then I moved into project management. And really, my first love of the industry is data collection and field operations, project management, and just managing all the details so that my internal teams don't have to worry. I love to take that worry away from them. And then over the past few years, by accident, quite by accident, as a matter of fact, I realized that there was a need to educate people in the insights industry, researchers and platforms and providers, about accessibility of the technology and inclusivity in research. And that happened quite by accident. I actually had no idea I was going to become an educator in this space. And that's really what I view myself as now, is really an educator in this space. But over the last year and a half, I moved from Louisiana to Oregon. And as a part of that move, I began to become more involved with the Northwest chapter of the Insights Association. And what I'm up to now is serving as president-elect for the organization. So
that's very awesome. Cool. That's awesome.
Thank you.
We're really happy to have you here. This episode that we are recording now is a part of our DE&I and accessibility series. But this episode itself is going to be focused on accessibility. Because a podcast is so audio focused and centric, could you talk a little bit about your disability as much as you're comfortable chatting about?
Yes. So first of all, thank you for asking me to talk about it. Some people like to and others don't, and that's an individual preference. And so I appreciate that you asked if that was okay with me. I am totally blind. I have been blind since birth, so all of my life. And I, as a part of my working life, I accommodate for my blindness by basically my working life and my personal life, by acquiring skills of blindness. So training in how to find and use alternative techniques that are not visual techniques to perform the same tasks as anyone else performs, whether it be in my personal life or in my professional life. But basically what I do in my own world is just find other ways of getting the work done and living my life that I want to live by problem solving and finding non-visual techniques to live and to just be successful in my work and in my personal world.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you have found that help you navigate the world around you?
Mm-hmm. So one of the tools that I use is to navigate in my environment is I use a white cane. So I use a long white cane. I have an idea that at some point I'll be getting a guide dog. But for now, it is my white cane. I use that, and I love that I have a cane because it means that I am proud to be a blind person, and I feel that way. There's no shame in my blindness. As a matter of fact, it makes it possible for me to open gateways to really interesting conversations. So that is a surefire way that anyone who visits with me in person as you know, in these podcasts or on Zoom meetings, I guess we're all sort of partially blind because mm-hmm. no one knows what everyone's disabilities are, right? So,
right.
But in person, so it's my cane. And then my mind, I'll say my mind is another tool because I'm always problem solving, alternative ways of doing something. You know, every single day there's something that comes up in my world that I ask myself, how am I going to accomplish this? Whether it be lighting candles or whether it be navigating a spreadsheet. I use a screen reader to navigate my computer. And so what a screen reader is it is a piece of software that converts the text on my screen or on my phone to synthetic speech. Mm. So I'm listening to a voice that is not a human's voice, but synthetic, read the screen out loud to me. But how I use the computer is I navigate with keyboard commands and then I navigate by listening instead of navigating and using a mouse, since I would have no way of understanding where I'm clicking on the screen. Right. I use a series of arrow keys and shortcut keys, and I use a series of any kind of keyboard shortcuts that an application allows to navigate. So I guess the best way to compare what using a screen reader would be like as opposed to a person who is using their vision is a sighted person will use their vision to look around the screen. You'll move your eyes to get to where you're wanting to be focused,
right,
and your mouse.
Right.
For me, I am using physical movement. I am moving my cursor or my mouse cursors. I have ability to move these things to get to the place on the screen that I need to be so I can listen to what is happening at that place. So for me, navigation is movement, whereas for you, it's just changing your focus of your eyes or your mouse.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. When it comes to doing market research, especially field work, what are tools that you have found that are accessible, especially to blind people, for doing surveys and whatnot? Because I know Marianne, you and I have met previously. We've known each other for a while, and you are the first blind person that I have known personally and that I have had the pleasure of getting to know. I'm sure most of our podcast listeners, if not all of them, probably fall in that same category. You're probably the first blind person that they have heard of, especially a blind person working in the market research industry. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we think of very often. And I have shared this with you before, but it was after meeting you that suddenly I realized some of the things that we use in the market research industry to collect opinions and collect information from respondents, just frankly, just aren't going to work for someone who's blind. So, right? Like for me, I think the biggest thing is in some areas, I know IKEA has one, just as you're walking out the door, there's a little stand and it has 5 different smiley faces or emojis on it. And they are for you to give a really quick, how was your experience at IKEA? But it dawned on me when I saw that, A, you wouldn't even know it was there unless your cane touched it. And if it did touch it, you wouldn't exactly know what it was until you discovered more. But B, you also wouldn't know at what end of the scale was the happy and what was the angry and anything in between. Right. And so it started to make me realize that we haven't necessarily created a lot of tools that are blind friendly, for example. So in your work in market research, what are some of those tools that you have found that mm-hmm. do work for you?
Mm-hmm. And that is super interesting. One, I had no idea IKEA had these kiosks as you enter. So that is educational for me.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely correct. I wouldn't know it was there unless I tapped it. And, you know, I don't always feel that I want, especially now in the middle of a pandemic or wherever we are in the pandemic, and wherever point anyone is listening to this, I'm not so inclined to want to reach out and start examining everything with my hands, where maybe I might have in the past.
Right.
I'm a little more careful. It's different if it's merchandise on a shelf. If I'm in a store, I must explore. My cane gives me license to do that. If I walk in a store, and I learned this as a very young child, if I walk in a store without a cane and I just start examining the shelves with my hands, the store owners are wondering whether or not they need to keep their security cameras on me.
So, yeah.
And so, you know, again, it's that awareness that I am a blind person and I have a cane, and so I'm exploring. But when I am not sure what the item is, you're exactly right. So I appreciate that level of empathy, because that's exactly what my world can absolutely, that experience is absolutely a part of my life on an ongoing basis.
Right.
You know, even down to, you know, there's a Braille sign on a wall by a door of a room.
Yeah.
And if I'm staying in a hotel for a conference, once I understand that the doors generally have that placard at a certain height, it's either on one side of the door or the other, but every hotel is different. And so until I know, I absolutely have no clue whatsoever. So, so in the market research space, I never meant to become an educator about accessibility. I love project management. I'm always looking for opportunities to do field work and project management, data collection, helping out in the recruiting space. I love these areas of our industry. And I realized when a client of mine, that I was just managing projects for, that we conduct research on blindness related topics. We realized that there was a platform that we've been using for 10 years that was no longer accessible when they upgraded the GUI, which is the graphical user interface on the web.
Okay.
And I had to seek out another, and I went to various platforms and these are quantitative, mind you.
Yeah.
And I had interviews and meetings with folks on various sales teams, and was met with very, very sad results. I would hear items like, we know that our surveys are accessible to the participant, but we don't think that the composer is accessible to a blind person who wants to program the survey.
And they were just okay with that? Like but it's in our pipeline or anything like that. It was just acknowledgement and move
an acknowledgement. Right.
Yes. I never heard it's in our pipeline. I heard, we know it should be, but it's just not accessible. I mean, because we did our part. We did what we thought we should do to make it 508 compliant.
Right.
For a survey for respondents. Right. For participants. And while I suppose that's true, right, it's really on the edge of okay. And in my mind, it's absolutely really not okay, you know.
No, it speaks to those companies that say, you know, you have to almost double click into these companies that are now making these statements of, we're diverse, or we create products for a diverse set of customers, or whatever it is. And so these companies saying, we are accessible to our customers, you have to double click into that and say, but how are you treating your employees? Like, are you accessible on the inside? Because if you're not taking care of your employees, the minute that outside of your company, it doesn't become profitable, the company hasn't already elevated that importance within their doors. How do we trust that they're going to keep that elevated outside their doors? It's performative.
Right. And diversity is a philosophy, I always feel. It's not a decision-making process. It's not meeting our quota that we hire X number of people with a particular race or ethnicity, disability. It's a philosophy.
Yeah. You know?
And so you're exactly right, Christina, that yes. I don't think the words you chose were absolutely perfect. Yes. It's because it's a philosophy of diversity. It comes from the inside out. Yes.
You mentioned a policy, a 508 policy. I just want to take the chance to ask you what that is.
Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely fair. So this has to do with, and rather than get into the nitty gritty driest of detail, so this has to do with the expectation that, like, accommodations or ADA compliance in physical spaces, now there are compliance related to digital spaces like websites that are dictated that these must be accessible.
I didn't realize that those two even were two separate things.
They're not supposed to be now.
Okay. Okay. So is the 508 supposed to be part of the ADA then?
I'm still updating my own skills about that. But anytime I am talking about 508 compliance, it has to do with ADA. Now there are ADA related to the digital space of websites and of environments, online environments must be compliant, 508 compliant. And as a part of that, then we get into, and again, because people can do their homework, we won't get into the weeds about the accessibility guidelines. So there are what they call WCAG 2.0. It's going to be 2.2 coming up. But these are Web Accessibility Consortium guidelines. And what these offer is they offer an opportunity for developers and designers to be thinking about how their web and documents are accessible to not just people who are using screen readers, but other types of accessibility for other disabilities. And so these are guidelines that can be followed so that it's a framework. My experience has been that compliance is a driver, but it doesn't change the philosophy of diversity, like we're talking about. When it's a must, accessibility isn't approached with the same desire as when it is inspired.
Right.
So in my experience, as I was talking with these organizations and I was hearing these very sad responses,
right.
I found an organization who actually didn't even realize to the level of accessible they were. And when I went and spoke with them in person at a training, as well as just over the past few years, they actually will consult with me before rolling out new features.
Wow.
That's amazing.
It's a delight. And so this company believes in accessibility. And while they understand that there are still areas of their platform from the respondent point of view and from the composer side, that needs some improvement because it's an ongoing process. Yeah. Accessibility isn't a one and done. It's a procedure you follow, and now all the websites you have designed are now accessible and will be forevermore. That's not how accessibility works. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, I have found from a programming standpoint, from a composer side, one platform that is extremely accessible. And then I know that many platforms these days in terms of quantitative are usable and accessible by people with disabilities who are respondents. I want to pay and give my money and give my licensing to companies who believe on accessibility from the inside out, like you said,
right,
Christina.
Right. Right.
And if we move into, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we're all in favor of, if there are folks listening that want to know or want to be either supportive of a platform like that, or maybe they're in the same position and they're trying to find a platform that is accessible to them. If you're comfortable sharing the name of the platform that you are all in favor of, like, we are more than happy to hear that.
Well, that is a delight. So this used to be a company called SurveyGizmo, and now Servigizmo has become Alchemer. Mm. And that's so Alchemer.
Okay.
And yes, they have been accessible both from the respondent side and from the composer, the internal programming perspective. Just an all around, they have the philosophy of accessibility, of diversity. When I read their help documentation, when I am composing a survey, there are tips that they include in their help documentation. These questions work best for screen readers. You know, when you're designing a ranking question type, you know, avoid these pitfalls. You know, yes, they have accessibility in mind when I call in for technical support, when I have questions. Whenever I speak to an agent, they have some familiarity with accessibility. All of the support folks do.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yes, it is.
That is a real testament to a company that actually has made accessibility just part of the company.
Yes.
Pillar. Right? It's something that they're doing.
Exactly. Exactly. It's not an add-on. It's not a now let's start. It is everything that they do. It's just a natural piece of the consideration set that they take into any kind of development build or anything. I think that is huge.
It's huge. From the ground up, accessibility designed into a platform, into a research study, into a philosophy of an organization, when it is from the ground up, when it's a part of that design process, it is a change rather than a patchwork experience. Yes, you absolutely hit the nail on the head. Exactly. Yeah. And if we move though into a real situation that's come up because of the isolation and because folks have been at home, if we look at qualitative platforms, this is an entirely different situation.
Yeah.
I have tested probably 20 platforms, and there are many. So I'm happy to help anyone test a platform. But my experience is that it is not there. I haven't found any one platform where a person who is using assistive technology, such as a screen reader like me, I haven't found a platform where all of the activities are accessible yet. I have found platforms where none are, where 3 of 10 are, but never 10 of 10.
And this is both likely, I'm putting words in your mouth, so please correct me, but this is both as a participant and likely as the moderator.
Correct. Moderators, my experience is when I have accessed these platforms from the moderator perspective, I have even less likelihood of being able to access the internals of the diaries of, you know, interacting with the respondents in messages, in boards. It's even worse when I signed it. This is the story. This is the conversation I have with these folks. I can't access this whatsoever. There are no labeled links. I can't tab through. I can't access any part of this. Oh, you must be logged in as the moderator. Hold on, we'll fix it. You know, and so I am a person who is an educator now, where I didn't know I was going to be. In our space over the last year, diversity has come up more and more in our world. And diversity is not just about race or ethnicity, but it's about everyone. It's about people with disabilities, you know. And so being able to educate platforms and researchers, I have had to consult to find a platform that will meet the needs of the specific activities that the researcher is looking to use for their research project. But what I feel a bit sad about is I don't want my researcher to be limited in the types of activities. I want the voice of that person with a disability to be heard as loud and in the same way as everyone else.
Right.
And I feel that sense of loss for that person with the disability, that participant, or heck, that moderator, even if it was to be one.
Yeah.
You know, that we have to design the research around the limitations of the platform rather than being able to have the same freedom that we would for anyone else to participate.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
Marianne, I want to kind of shift gears a little bit, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of zoom out in your career and what you're doing now and kind of talk about how you got here. I want to talk about, like, how did you find yourself in market research? How did it start? I think that, again, I am putting all of my thoughts, I am projecting, I think, my own assumptions of it must be intimidating when you are heading out into, let's say, quote unquote, a professional world, and maybe you don't know where you can fit, where you can go, what you can do. And maybe it's not. Maybe this is my own assumptions, but I can't be the only one that has this assumption. So I want to know, just know about your experience finding yourself in market research. What was it like? What was that process like for you?
Yeah. And I really do appreciate the assumptions because you're exactly right. You are not alone. I'm certain of that. To reflect back on what Z, you said, which is that most people haven't met a blind person. Most people not only haven't maybe necessarily met a blind person, but if they have, it's an elderly family member who has many other health issues and concerns.
Right. Right.
And so
not a work colleague.
Not a work colleague. Right. And so then there's this unintentional, but I mean, we're human. These things happen. There's this unintentional, I guess, bias that we're bringing is, mm-hmm. Oh, how can she do this work if she's like my elderly grandmother?
Right.
And I can't blame them. I mean, I can't blame a person for not having familiarity. I don't blame anyone for not knowing what they don't know. You know, what saddens me is when people aren't open to being curious to find out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but no one can help.
Teach me. I'm curious. Yes. I want to cure or address my biases and my thought processes. So
there you go.
I'll ask the questions that are uncomfortable and hopefully not have repercussions. But if they that's are, excellent. Then that's something that also needs to be addressed. Like, right? Like, I'm all about learning and I'm all about having the uncomfortable conversations. Mm-hmm. So please, I'm a sponge. I want to know.
I'm glad and I appreciate that. And I'm happy to have the uncomfortable conversations too. So that works out. So, you know, when... I'll tell you, when I moved out to Oregon for the first time in the early 90s, I moved here from Michigan, and I had no idea what I was going to do with myself. I was 22 years old. I just knew that I wanted to live out here. Mm-hmm. I realized by going to an agency that is the Commission for the Blind, which is a state agency that helps blind and low vision clients gain better skills to become employable. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that I didn't have skills to become employable until, it's amazing when we're young. I didn't know until I had a counselor who worked at the agency who was interviewing me to determine what type of training I might need. And he asked me many, many questions and I answered, you know, he asked me about various skills, you know, and after I answered all of his questions, he said, frankly, Marianne, you're just not employable.
Oh dear.
Oh, wow.
And he said, we need to get you some training so that you can be employable.
How did you feel hearing that? Like, did you feel like this is a mountain that I can conquer, or did you feel like, oh God?
Yeah.
Or maybe a little bit of both.
Yeah. I felt like, wow, am I in for a long haul? I think I cried for a few days about that. Even though our conversation ended on a real positive note, which is, we know that when you come here for training, you are going to be absolutely employable. And and there's hope for that. Right. But just to have someone say, when you see, I moved out here with starry eyes and rainbows. Oh, I'm going to move here. I'm going to get a job. Yep. You know, I'm 21 years old.
Yep.
And then I realize, gee, I don't even know how to use the buses. I don't know how to use my cane. I've never used a cane most of my life. I don't know how to cook for myself. I don't know how to clean. I don't know how to cut up my own food. I don't know. And here I'm thinking I'm going to get a job. Like, because here's, when I was in college, I just ate on the meal plan. Right.
Right.
I didn't have to worry about, you know, and I lived in a dorm. So
yeah,
I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know that I didn't know how to use technology. And I didn't know that there were countless things that would take hours. I had no idea that I was not ready to go to work by any stretch of the amount. I just didn't know. And maybe it was better that I didn't in some ways, because had I known what I didn't know, I may have been intimidated. So I was already living here.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I was already living here. And I will tell you that that move was one of the best decisions that changed my life for the absolute best that it could have ever been. And so I went for training, 6 months of training, where I lived on site, and I soaked it all up like a sponge, like you were saying, Christina. I really embraced and fell in love with the freedom that living in Oregon gives me because of our amazing transportation and just the acceptance of people out this way is wonderful. And then after I finished my training, I realized that I now had a new set of skills, but I needed to find, you know, some type of work that was going to fulfill me. And, you know, I struggled trying to figure out what I was going to do. I didn't have a degree either at that point. I really had no idea what I was in for. So I happened on one day, I happened to find an ad for a research interviewer, and it was posted in our local newspaper. This is in 1998.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I was using a dial-up modem back then, and because I had newfound computer skills that I learned in my training. Yeah. And so I found this position, and I had a friend of mine stay up with me that very day. I said, I must have this job. I want this job. I must have this interviewing job, and I don't know how I'm going to get it, but I'm going to get it. And so he stayed up with me until 2 o'clock in the morning, and we revamped a resume that had very little experience in it. Mm. And I faxed it the next day, and they called me, and I didn't disclose my blindness in my resume. I disclosed it when I called on the phone. And many people choose to or not to disclose. That is a personal preference. Yeah. I like to. I feel that it makes my employer comfortable to know that I'm honest, and I want to answer questions that might come up from that practical vein.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But some folks, you know, it is as personal as any decision that anyone can make about whether people disclose, but I prefer to. And also, to be quite honest, it really helps me weed out companies that I don't want to work for.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yep.
If I tell a manager about my blindness, and then they decide that I'm either not qualified, quote, right. or that they don't want me to even interview with them, well, they just saved me time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. I know that it's really important to advocate for the rights of blind people. I'm a part of organizations that do just that. But when I need to eat and I need to pay my bills and I need to survive, yeah, I have to find work, and I need to move on to the next company who will give me a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's as real as it gets. I mean, this is as real as it gets. And so I found this company, and I went in and I interviewed with them, and I had an initial interview with a supervisor, and he and I had just the initial conversation, and I, you know, was able to talk about my familiarity with the company. I had spent lots of hours researching on my dial-up modem. And,
yeah.
And then I came back for a second interview with the director of the data collection department. It was a 75 person call center back then.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a wonderful conversation, and he said to me, you know, I really wanted to find out if you can do this job. So
because of your blindness,
because of my blindness.
Yeah.
Yes. And you're absolutely right. That is a super important distinction to make. He was not uncomfortable with the understanding that my blindness means that I need to do this work in a way that's different from everyone else he has worked with in this company. It's his responsibility as the director of that department to make sure I can do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of my lack of skill or an excessive skill, but because he has a responsibility that if I'm hired, it doesn't matter blindness or not, can I do the work?
Sure.
And because of because he knew that I needed to work differently,
yep.
He said, let's find a way to help me determine that you can do this work. And he was very creative. And so he said to me, I'm going to email you a questionnaire, and I want you to call me after you've had time to review it this afternoon, and we're going to role play.
Mm-hmm.
And
so he's the respondent and you're the one. Yeah. So let you have an actual experience. That's cool.
Dry run. Yes. You did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I wish so many companies who are looking to hire, just in general, when I find a company that asks me to demonstrate my skills, yeah. I love it. I love that homework, as we call it, right? That homework.
Yeah.
Well, how many companies now have folks, I mean, developers have to whiteboard code to prove that they can do it, right? Like they have mm-hmm. to do that in their mm-hmm. interview. Mm-hmm. They, you know, it's not, I feel like, and I don't know, it's how many of us have had to do quote unquote homework or use cases mm-hmm. as a part of their interviewing process. I have, I've had to
more
do that.
Now. I think more now than ever.
So did you, when you were given this, did you take it as a, I have to prove this because I'm blind, or were you more excited that he was open and you knew he just had to make sure that you could, how did you take that, that homework, I guess?
Yeah.
And that's a really, really great question, because something like that came up recently where I had to demonstrate that I could do work for a client before they would give me the work. And just recently, and I had thought about how that felt now versus how it felt back then. And so I'll cover back then. How I felt was super excited. Oh my gosh, someone is giving me a chance to prove myself
mm-hmm.
rather than saying, well, if I can't figure out how I would do the job as a blind person, then I'm not sure how Marianne can figure out how she's going to do this job as a blind person. So I'm not going to hire her because I just don't know how it's at all possible.
Mm.
Wow.
And that is,
yeah.
That is a real common misconception yeah. is that if a manager or a director or a hiring manager is trying to, or anyone in an organization is trying to evaluate hiring someone, that they are trying to figure out the obstacles that I would face
yeah.
by putting themselves into that situation. It is misguided because that person doesn't have the skills of blindness.
Right.
Heck, I didn't even have the skills of blindness, right? I had to go for training.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
So how can that person understand by closing their eyes and saying, oh, now I'm a blind person? That's not accurate.
Mm-hmm.
If you close your eyes, you're just going to get scared.
yeah.
You know, without the skills of blindness, without the problem solving that, and the belief, having the belief that I can figure out how to accomplish any task, whether it's a personal one or a professional task,
yep.
whatever I need to figure out, I will and have always in every situation found some way of getting it done, always. And, you know, but that comes with skill and understanding of problem solving.
Yeah.
So I was super excited. I was super excited to go home. And as a matter of fact, I remember I needed to get that questionnaire in a way that I could read out loud instead of listening to it on my computer.
Oh, yeah.
And I, because I use a screen reader, my computer, I was having to listen to it out loud. And that wasn't working as well. I didn't want to pair it back to him when I called. And I also use Braille, which is a way of reading with my fingertips, reading characters and symbols that represent written language.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I wanted to read the questionnaire out loud in Braille. And there are electronic devices that allow that to happen where I can either print it out on paper, on hard copy, or a refreshable Braille display that allows me to connect it to my computer and read what's on the screen. And I had neither, of those things. what I did have, though, was a manual Braille writer, which is it has six keys on it. And it kind of looks like a typewriter. And it's a Perkins Braille writer, if anyone is interested. And so what I had to do was I had to sit with my Braille writer and Braille by hand the entire questionnaire.
Wow.
And it took hours. It took a couple of hours to do this.
Yeah.
But I really wanted that job and I was going to get it. I wanted it. I wanted it. And,
yep.
And so I called in the afternoon and we role played. And he said, great, looks like you can do the job. Now, okay, feel free to get in touch with the Commission for the Blind and let's have a meeting about the next steps and we're going to move forward and we're going to move forward with the accommodations that need to happen.
Wow.
How did that, like, again, how did that make you feel?
I was over the moon. I was over the moon with absolute excitement,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, I didn't have a start date yet because we were just beginning. This was in early July of 98,
mm-hmm.
and I needed a good deal of accommodations because we were using Caddy, which is computer-aided telephone interviewing, and it was a DOS-based environment, so a real old technology back then.
Oh, wow. Right. No graphical user interface, text only input to get to the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Which is okay. Except in order to interface with it, there had to be a lot of programming in the screen reader scripting language. And there had to be a lot that was done to make that work back then. And so I didn't have a start date and I was so excited. And this is where it is really a strong belief for me that as a blind person who is employed with an organization or who is working to be, it is my responsibility to manage that project, getting me employed with this company.
Right.
It's my project because I'm the one that will be working here eventually.
Yeah.
So it is up to me to gather the right people together to, define the project requirements, to, you know, outline the steps that need to happen, the order, the timelines, just like any other project.
I was going to say, we're such project managers.
Yes,
I know.
We have milestones to meet.
Yes, exactly. And there were so many of these. And so fast forward 3 months. So, I'll never forget it. It was the beginning of October and I called the director and I said, here's where we stand with all the accommodations. And the company was absolutely outstanding. We had a cubicle on a different floor to work on. We had all the programmers at our disposal as we needed. It was truly a unique experience that is not common, quite honestly. Just the most amazing folks. So I called on, I want to say early October, and I said, here's where we stand. Here's where we are in the processes, the programming and the scripting for the screen reader to work with the interviewing is almost complete. We're going to be good to go to ready to move this computer up to the data collection floor. And can I have a start date?
Yeah.
And he said, now that we know that this is really working, I think you should come in and start with everyone else when everyone else comes in for training on October 15th. So,
oh my gosh.
To this day, every single year, because this was my first full-time job. I mean, benefits, and I will share with you that there is a very high number of people who are blind and low vision who aren't working. Mm-hmm. 70% of a lot of blind people are not working.
Mm-hmm.
And so this day when I got my start date, I know I cried that day.
Oh yeah.
I was so happy. A friend of mine bought me a briefcase.
Oh my gosh.
It was like, and I went in and then what happened is I was working 4 days a week because I was on a specific project. And then of course, the second week I got there, I said, can I work on the other project that this team is working on? And then I just fit myself into more and more, more and more, projects, data collection, yep. Interviewing, you know, and I was over the moon. I mean, but then what ended up happening is a few years later, we shifted a lot of the organization to an outsource model. And so we lost our call center and, my role shifted and, you know, that was so exciting for me because I had so many years of working in this organization where people were now educated that yeah. there was always a way for me to accomplish the work.
Yep. Yep.
I moved that's when I began to move into the project management roles at that point.
Marianne, I think there's so much to that story that any hiring manager would just be like, how many Mariannes can I hire?
Yes.
Just
well, you can
just
have this one.
Like you just need one and she's right here.
Exactly. Exactly. But just the things that you talk about there are things that so many hiring managers look for, right? Problem solving skills, the eagerness to say, I can take on more, give me more. And not just wait for the more to be given to you, but to be that proactive person that says, all right, what else? What else? Give me more. What else can I do? I know about this other thing. Put me on that thing.
Uh-huh.
Right?
I want to learn more. I don't know how to do that, but I can. And I've already proven that.
Exactly. Exactly. Those are, I can't imagine any hiring manager who would not just be over the moon to hire someone with those skills and with that drive and mm-hmm. that passion. Mm-hmm. It there's just so much there that I think is so incredibly valuable for any organization.
Wow. I'm really happy that we got the chance to talk about it then, you know, if it helps anyone that it can help, anyone that it can educate, you know, that's what really counts. Again, that I never knew I was meant to educate in the ways that I find myself educating people now.
Right.
You know, and it's really, you know, my world of finding accessible platforms. And then as the year has gone by and all the talk of diversity and inclusion in insights really showed me that I have an opportunity to help our community and educate and to help evaluate even a research project. How can I make this, a researcher asking, how can I make my project more inclusive? How do I design my questionnaire? You know, how do we determine the platform to use? You know, and really just the opportunity, again, that there is that education piece. And I think that the education piece for hiring managers who have never worked with a blind person or a person with a disability have, like, as you mentioned, no idea that really it's just an exercise in problem solving. It has nothing to do with that my eyes don't work.
You know? Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Marianne, it has been an absolute delight talking to you. There is a thing that we have been asking each person who comes on to the podcast is for this particular series. And I would love to close on this. And it's, what is your dream for the market research industry? What would be your dream for this industry?
My dream is that the voices of people with disabilities can be heard in every project, on every platform, and in every research study, whether the researcher knows that that person is included or not, that the default is just that they are.
Isn't that a beautiful dream?
I love that so much. And it's just, the dream, right, is to just get to the point that it doesn't have to be a part of the conversation, because it's just an assumption that, because it just is, it's the reality. And we don't need to know. That's the thing, is like, we don't need to know, unless it's a study on blindness and unless like it matters to the insights, like, you should just be invited to give your thoughts and feedback
on everything,
regardless
on every topic,
and to be able to produce those insights, like you, like Marianne, on your side, like on both sides of the computer, whether it's taking the survey, well, I guess everyone's on a computer, but like whether you're in the back end of programming and trying to deliver and produce those insights versus whether you are the respondent that is trying to have your voice heard.
It should just be, included all around. Yep.
Yeah. But that raises something that I think is a real important note to share here, which is at this moment, that is not where we are.
Right.
Where we are is that it is an opportunity to educate, in this industry. And so I will share that as a participant in insights events, as a participant in research, as a designer a supporter of clients of mine who are putting together and designing their projects. What I will share is I take a very proactive stance. If I know I need accommodations for an event, for a project, for what have you, I take responsibility and I reach out to, let's just use a Zoom event as just an example for simplicity. So if I have an event that I'm attending and I know that it's a month away. If I register for that event and I know that I would like to have the slides in advance so I can review them, if I know that that they are going to be using a particular platform, I suppose in a workshop, I would like to know what that is ahead of time so I can evaluate it myself. Can I use it?
Yeah.
Or it could be any number of questions that I might have, or accommodations that I know I need. Maybe I would like access to the handouts ahead of time so I can review them, so I know what everyone else is, all the other attendees are receiving at that time.
Yeah.
It is my responsibility as well as the person with the need for the accommodation to reach out to that, to the host of the event and ask for what I need.
Yep.
No one can read my mind, and we're not where I hope we would be. My dream has not yet been realized, but it has to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And so what I always encourage folks, and this is really kind of my motto, is just feel free to ask people what they need. How can we accommodate you in the research? How can we accommodate you in, on the job,
Yeah.
And so even just having a form as a part of your registration process for a Zoom event that says, do you require any accommodations to participate in this event. Yep. And, you know, if I have a responsibility as that person with a disability, that I give you enough notice that you can accommodate me. I can't expect that I tell you this morning that you're going to know how to meet my needs. We're just not there yet.
Right. Right.
So anytime we can ask in our curious minds as researchers, anytime we can ask, it's a great opportunity to learn what others need so that we can help them be successful on our projects and in our work environment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yep. Love it. Marianne, once again, thank you so much for sharing your experience, for honestly, for all the work that you have been doing, educating so many of us in the market research space. It's been an absolute delight. Where can people find you?
So people can find me on LinkedIn if you search for me there. And there will be a link in the show notes to my LinkedIn, and you can reach out to me via email, and that will be available to you as well. I always welcome questions and always happy to connect with folks. So please feel free to reach out. There's no question that is, you know, too dumb. It's about that curious mind and want to know how to make our industry better. And I'm happy to help in any way that I can.
Thank you so much, Marianne. This was so fun. I really appreciate your time. And I think everyone just really learned a lot. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for listening to today's episode of MR Explorer. You can find us online at MRXPLORER, that's MRExplorer.com, or you can find us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Links will be in the show notes. Please like, subscribe, and we look forward to exploring more topics about market research with you soon.